Hello and welcome to episode 9 of the QB2 Experience podcast. You're listening to Salvatore Stefanelli. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. Joining me as always is my lovely co-host Jim Sonnis. Jim, how are you doing tonight?
I am doing great. You know, week 8 was disgusting in every sense of the word for fantasy, but we have flushed it. It is no longer here. It is extinct, and we can move on to week 9. That's I've decided to just go with the upbeat attitude and just totally degaff whatever it was that happened in week 8.
I mean, the nice thing about week 9 is, well, we still have 6 teams on a bye, but we don't have a London game to worry about. And we have a Thursday night football game, which might get more than like 5 people to watch.
The problem is AJ Green's on a bye, and I have way too much exposure to AJ Green. So
I have a lot of teams that have AJ Green and Lamar Miller on it.
Oof. Yeah, I have Lamar too. I have. Okay, so bad disclosure here that will ruin all legitimacy I have for fantasy. I'm in a 16-team league where I am currently slated to start DeJuan Harris on Sunday. So that's the state of my week 9 buys. So that happy-go-lucky attitude I was discussing before, it's masking a lot of very dark feelings that I have towards this slate at the moment.
I mean, well, the good thing about the week 9 is there actually are some good names you can still get on the waiver wire and more, yeah, in more shallow leagues. I don't know about a 16-team league. Like, I'm pretty sure like the Charkhandrick Wests and the Rashard, yeah, Matthews of the world are probably owned in that league. Even I imagine Tim Hightower is probably owned, but for, you know, people that play like 12 or 10 teams leagues, like the bye week this week came at an okay time in terms of players getting more opportunities.
Right, exactly. So there is that, at least, and there were a lot of running backs, at least, where there are opportunities for them. Antoine Smith from Tampa Bay too, but it's just like, I don't want to start those guys. So thank goodness for daily fantasy is my final conclusion from all this muck that has happened in week 9.
And that's not a sponsored advertisement.
No, that is just a relief advertisement from my own brain.
I mean, you mentioned how disgusting and yucky and ugly week 8 was, but in terms of our streaming picks, we didn't do a whole lot. Yeah. We didn't do a whole lot. We did do a whole lot of picks. We didn't do that bad in terms of the picks we made. We'll just recap here. So our top streamers last week were Jameson Winston, Andy Dalton, Kirk Cousins. Oh, yeah, we should mention the Andy Dalton Cousins bet we had last week. You know, Jim, if you recall, was on Team Andy. I was on Team Kirk. We did like them both, and yeah, it's pretty close. You know, Dalton had 19.46 points, was a QB12. Kirk Cousins had 24.22 points, was a QB7. So technically, that does make me the lord and master of this podcast, but I feel like it was a win for both of us.
I can't count it as even half a win for me because your pick threw for 458 freaking yards and just didn't really benefit from like the randomness of touchdowns. If touchdowns had fallen the correct way for Kirk Cousins, you would have totally smoked me. So I fully concede that you are the master of the QB2 podcast, and I have I just bow down to you at this point, Sal, because that was really impressive. I did not. I liked Kirk Cousins a lot, but I did not see that coming. So I totally cede the victory to you on that one, and it was well deserved too.
Well, I will take it, and I'll just quickly mention here that that's 4 straight top 12 finishes for Andy Dalton now. I know they're on a
Tyler
bye.
Eifert's back.
Tyler Eifert's back. They're on a bye this week, but no, they got Giants, Buffalo, Baltimore, Philly, Cleveland, Pittsburgh, Houston in week 16. You're not going to want to avoid him. But it's almost like in a one quarterback league, he seems like a guy you want to kind of hold on to through the bye if you can.
Yeah, absolutely. And as I mentioned Tyler Eifert, and that's huge because, again, I think I mentioned this last week, but as far as, you know, individual pass catchers, Eifert was the most efficient pass catcher in the entire league in 2015 of guys who had at least 70 targets based on number fires metrics. So he is a huge boon for that offense, specifically for Andy Dalton. And, you know, with Marvin Jones and Mohamed Sanu gone, it did seem as if Dalton was hurting, but I think he's totally past that. And now that he has AJ Green and Tyler Eifert, I agree. You can lock him in and load him in, and he's probably going to give you a lot of solid performances down the stretch.
You know, I was still hesitant in terms of starting Tyler Eifert last week. Like, I wanted to see him get, right, more playing time and play at a level where he was healthy, but he surpassed my expectations, and I'm sure the expectations of many who were kind of on the fence about Eifert. But no, he's definitely back now. All right, so we mentioned Dalton and Cousins were both top 12 quarterbacks. Jameson Winston was QB 13. He did score almost 19 fantasy points, and it was only 0.66 points away from the QB 12 finish. And then the other quarterback we recommended as a streamer was a friend of the podcast, even though he might not know that he's a friend of the podcast, Alex Smith. He scored 9.98 fantasy points, was QB 24, but no, that's with the caveat that, no, he died on the field, he was resurrected, then he came back to life again. Or no, then he died again, I should say. I mean, I don't even know my Easter story, but no. This all plays into the story of Alex. But if you were to combine Alex Smith's fantasy points and Nick Foles' fantasy points, they would have been 26.8, good enough for QB 6 on the week. So for everybody who had Alex Smith shares last week and didn't know how bad the damage really was, sorry to break the news to you.
What could have been? Man. And they were leading in that game. It was like the game script that you fear for the Chiefs, and they still did that. Ugh.
Those watching those hits to the ground that he took. It's like, I watched the highlight a few times and I was like, I was sick to my stomach.
Yeah.
Just seeing his head bounce off the ground like that.
And then you see the headline on Monday that they said he didn't have a concussion, and you're like, no, he did. Believe me. Well, I'm not a neurologist. I don't know if that's even the right doctor for this, but I'm not one of those, and I'm pretty sure he had a concussion.
I mean, reading the transcripts of what the coaches said, what the on-field trainers were saying, it read like a Benny Hill skit. Like, he had a concussion. No, he didn't. Yes, he did. No, he didn't. Alex, did you have a concussion? I didn't feel like I had a concussion. It's like, does anybody even know what a concussion is? No, since we're talking about the NFL, probably not.
Right, no kidding. Yeah.
But yeah, man. So I would not be surprised if this is the end of Alex Smith in Kansas City, sadly. If Nick Foles plays well, they win, the offense is moving, I don't see why Andy Reid would go back to Alex Smith. Like he said, he would go back to Alex Smith if he was healthy. He said that on Monday. Today he's still going in the protocol, even though we have a team doctor and Smith himself saying he didn't have a concussion. So
right,
we'll see how that story turns out.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to work. It's just super weird all around. So hopefully he didn't. Like, that'd be great from a personal point of view. Like, hopefully that didn't happen. I just find it really hard to believe that that's the case.
Yeah, they need to wipe all video records from the face of the planet if they want us to believe that he didn't have a concussion.
Right.
All right. Our rapid fire recommendations last week were Tyrod Taylor. He scored 18.12 fantasy points, was QB 15, and that is now since week one. He has gone 7 straight games where he scored 15 or more fantasy points and has finished no worse than QB 15 during that stretch. So all hail the Ty God. He is back. Except
absolutely,
he's playing Seattle this week, so might hold off on that.
He was back.
Yeah. I mean, and if you throw in EJ Manuel, he had 3 fantasy points. He threw for 35 yards at a 2-point conversion. If you were to add that to Tyrod's total, they would have combined to be the QB 10 on the week.
That's not bad. That'd work for sure. Especially, in a not necessarily great matchup.
Mm-hmm. Then we had our desperation streamer of the week was Josh McCown. He ended up with 20.64 fantasy points and was the QB 10. He outscored and outproduced Ryan Fitzpatrick, who had 14.42 fantasy points, was QB 17, even though I think he was QB 45 at the half.
So wow.
It was a good second half for him.
Wow. That's brutal.
He was pretty bad in that first half.
Was he 3 of 14? Was that something like that?
He might have been. I didn't have the first half splits on me, but
it wasn't good.
Wouldn't surprise me.
It wasn't good. I know that. It was just, it was bad all around.
I'm actually surprised with the final stat line that he did.
Right. No, exactly. You see that afterwards, you're like, oh, that's not, that could have been a lot worse.
And then we have our last rapid-fire streaming recommendation in Brock Osweiler, who I'm now dubbing Lord Brockmort, because I never want to talk about him again if I can avoid it.
He who must not be named.
You know, he had, between Detroit and Cleveland, like those have become the two best matchups for quarterback streamers this year. And he was in a prime spot to put up numbers. But he came out with a paltry 9.14 fantasy points, was the QB26. The only quarterback he outscored from a starting standpoint was Trevor Siemian.
Who, not great territory there, Brock.
No, not good, Brock. Not good at all.
But, is he in never again territory for you now?
I mean, I feel like he's been in that territory for me. Pretty much all year,
yeah.
But I keep talking myself into the process of playing him in a good matchup.
Yeah.
But I just, when you can't do good against the Detroit Lions, who basically, like, you walk in to the game and you're going to put up, like, you're guaranteed to put up 16 fantasy points. Like,
you get a cushion of 10 to start.
Like, I remember last week when we listed off all of the, like, the averages against Detroit, and we're talking about how Brock, if he meets just, like, the basic minimum, he should have a good game. But it did not turn out that well for him.
No, absolutely not.
You know, I got some Brock stats for later on in the week for a little bit of foreshadowing for a clipboard holder who we'll talk about later on. But last week's clipboard holder was Philip Rivers. I mean, I feel like his stat line in terms of fantasy points would have been a lot better. You know, he went up against the Denver Broncos defense. He threw two touchdowns. He threw 267 yards. But he also threw three interceptions.
Yeah, that was not good. And it was kind of, I mean, it was fun as someone who, like, invested in the Denver defense. But, like, I love Philip Rivers so much where even that still hurt me to see that happen. He kind of went back to, like, young Philip Rivers mode, because he's always been so efficient throughout his career that I'm not used to seeing him have games like that anymore. But, yeah, that one was pretty gross from old Philly there.
Yeah, and, like, you know, when we're comfortable starting benching the likes of Philip Rivers against Denver defense, it goes short. It's kind of hard to trust quarterbacks in that matchup, mm-hmm. like whether they're good quarterbacks or bad quarterbacks. No, they've only allowed one top 12 finish to the quarterback position. That was back in week one. Since then, it's been QB 28, QB 25, QB 23, QB 19, QB 23, QB 29, QB 22. It's, if you look at those numbers, it's kind of hard to want to start a quarterback against Denver.
Yep.
It's a little bit of a warning to Derek Carr owners this week.
Oof, that's a tough decision, too. I'm fine benching him, but I understand not wanting to.
All right, so that's a quick recap of week 8. Time to move on to our week 9 streamers of the week. We start off with the man Jim has dubbed Dak Prescott, and he really has been the GOAT since that week one game. So this week he's facing the Cleveland Browns. That game currently sports a, is it 48.5? Let me check.
It's actually up to 48.5 now. Yeah, it's moving up.
Okay. So it was 48.5 when I looked at it this morning.
Yep.
I made the show notes. Yeah, it's still there. Applied team total still 27.75. When I checked, it was the second highest on the slate after Green Bay, who currently has a 30.5 implied team total.
That is meaty.
Has there been any team that's been over 30 yet this year?
I think San Diego had it. Or sorry, not San Diego. Atlanta had it in that San Diego game, maybe. Right. It was up there. It might have been the exact same. It was very high, I remember.
And they're 7-point road favorites. Wind factor, 6 miles per hour, so we don't really need to worry about that too much. So I'll start off here just quickly looking at the implied team total. So basically Vegas is saying the Cowboys are going to score 4 touchdowns. They haven't scored less than 24 points in a game since week 2, and they're averaging 28.2 points per game during that span. So the 4 touchdown projection matches up. The Browns are allowing 29.75 points per game. The fewest points they've allowed to a team in a game was 25 to Baltimore. So I'm going to throw it back to you, and then later on I'll throw in some interesting red zone stats I found.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, even after Sunday's tough game against Philly, and we can pretty much, I would guess, all agree that even though the fantasy output from Dak in week 8 was good, it wasn't his best game. But even when you include that game, he's still number 5's third ranked passer in terms of per dropback efficiency. He's behind Tom Brady and Matt Ryan, and he's also 5th in success rate. So even when you include that game, Dak is still super efficient, which has to be encouraging if you're trying to stream him here in this matchup. And that game came against number 5's top-ranked pass defense in the Philadelphia Eagles, and now he is facing the Cleveland Browns, who rank 30th. So a slight difference in the matchup for Dak this week. If you look at that Philadelphia game again, he actually had positive passing net expected points, which is our efficiency stat at number 5, and only 3 quarterbacks to face the Eagles have done that this year. Those are Matt Stafford, Dak Prescott, and Kirk Cousins, and only Stafford had a higher output than Dak Prescott did. So he's actually, you know, once you qualify for the opponent, it wasn't a terrible game from Dak, and I think that that's definitely encouraging. Now, the one thing that I think that may give people pause here for Dak is that they could see that 7-point favorite and think, okay, this is a game where Dallas is just going to use Zeke Elliott. They're going to pound him until he can pound no more, and Dak's not going to throw the ball a whole lot. But with that, he doesn't really have to. If you look at the 4 quarterbacks who have scored at least 18 points against the Browns this year, none of them have attempted more than 40 passes. The most was exactly 40. That was Tom Brady in the Tom Brady revenge week. You don't need a lot of volume to put up points against the Browns. And I'm actually kind of skeptical about that 7-point line. If you look at thespread.com, they show what percentage of bets are on which side. Right now, 80% of the bets are on Dallas's side. So they're saying that Dallas will cover that 7-point spread, but the line hasn't moved. It is the exact same spot where it opened. And what that kind of tells you is that there are higher money bets coming on the Cleveland side to cover that spread. And that makes sense. When you look at Dallas's defense, they've got Barry Church and Mo Claiborne both out for this game. And Cody Kessler and Josh McCown have both been super efficient this year. So they're good quarterbacks. They're facing a banged up defense. I actually think Dak Prescott's ceiling here is really good. I like him a lot from that perspective. We've seen what he's done the past few weeks to legitimize his floor. And I think that of our streamers, Dak would be far and away the best choice here just because that floor and ceiling combo is so hard to duplicate from guys in that, you know, that range from early in the season that would justify streaming.
You know, I definitely think Dak has the premier streaming matchup at the quarterback position this week. I can see your point wondering if the line is correct, if maybe it's a little bit of a trap. We talked about that back in week 1.
Always with Dallas, yeah.
When we thought the line was a little bit high. No, America's team, always got to give a little bit of a boost there. But you mentioned Cleveland, like they're bad on the ground. They're bad through the air. Like, you can pretty much score any way you want against these Cleveland Browns. They're allowing the 4th most fantasy points per game to the quarterback position at a rate of 20.4 per game, but they're also allowing the 3rd most fantasy points to the running back position at 24.9 points per game. They've averaged about 91.8 fantasy points per game to all positions, which is the most in the league. Quarterback, we might mention, running back, wide receivers, they're allowing the 5th most, well, actually tied for 4th with Baltimore, 27.2 points. Tight ends are scoring 11.7 points per game, which is the 3rd most. Even kickers are getting on the game. No, kickers against Cleveland this year are scoring 7.5 fantasy points. So basically, it's like you can start anyone you want at any position against the Cleveland Browns, and you should have a pretty good game. But since this is a podcast about quarterbacks, we'll take it back to Dak Prescott. Now, Cleveland this year has allowed QB finishes of QB11, QB19, QB10, QB14, QB2, QB4, QB7, QB17. You add that all up, and you have 5 top 12 fantasy finishes allowed, which is tied for the 2nd most with a few other teams. But if you break it down to those not top 12 guys, Joe Flacco, he had scored 16.18 points. Kirk Cousins scored 17.32 fantasy points. Ryan Fitzpatrick scored 14.42 fantasy points. That was the worst performance so far this year by the quarterback. If you look at Fitzpatrick's stat line, he was the first quarterback this year to not throw multiple touchdowns against Cleveland. Dak has thrown two or more touchdowns in three or seven games, but he's also combined for two or more touchdowns, so through the air and through the ground, in five of his seven games. And that's one of the parts I like a lot about Dak Prescott in this matchup. We mentioned how many points Cleveland is allowing to passers and runners, and no, Dak this year is leading the league in rushing touchdowns with four. And I wanted to touch on the red zone because the high implied team total sent me on a little bit of a rabbit hole this morning to see what what I could find in terms of that stat. So the Browns this year are allowing opponents 3.4 red zone scoring attempts per game. But at the same time, they're allowing opponents to score touchdowns in the red zone at a clip of 70.37%. So of those 3.4, you're looking at, basically almost like two out of three red zone attempts teams are scoring against Cleveland this year. And Prescott has scored the faux... I was going to say faux. I don't even know if that's a word.
It is now.
There we go. Prescott scored the fourth most fantasy points by a quarterback in the red zone this year, 59.32 points. He has eight passing touchdowns and four rushing touchdowns in the red zone. 44.5% of his total points have come in the red zone. He's averaging 20.5 points per game in his last six contests. You add that all up, and this is just a prime matchup for Dak Prescott and the Cowboys overall to just hammer points.
Yeah, and if you, I don't know if you, you probably do, Sal, but in general, if people read Rich Rebar's workbook on RotoWorld, he always says like the categories based on like reasonable return, bust, or like, you know, fire away. And it, the fire away section against Cleveland is always so meaty. And so it's always fun to read through that. Rich does a great job with that stuff. He's on board with Dak this week. I love Dak. You love Dak. Just fire Dak wherever you can.
Yeah. No, shout out to Rich Rebar there at Lord Reebs. You can find his worksheet on rotoworld.com. Fun fact, Rich and I both started out at XN Sports back in 2013. So it's always kind of cool to see just where his fantasy career
right.
is going. Because
no kidding.
Just blew up, and rightfully so, too.
Right. All that work he puts into that, it definitely it shines through.
That's why he is Lord Reebs.
And always shall be.
All right. So, I mean, honestly, I feel like I could talk about Dak Prescott for this whole podcast, just how much I love that matchup. But there are other quarterbacks we do like this week. And speaking of which is Colin Kaepernick at home against the New Orleans Saints. This game has a 52 over-under. The 49ers have a 24.5 implied team total, 3-point underdogs at home. We don't have to worry about the winds, currently projected at 4 miles per hour. New Orleans is allowing the 10th most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks at a rate of 18.1 per game. They have allowed QB finishes of QB 8, 24, 8, 9, 6, 11, 25. You add that up, that's another one of the teams that are tied for the second most top 12 finishes allowed this year. And I'll throw it off to you to give us some Colin Kaepernick number fire stat nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, I loved Kaepernick heading into that matchup against the Buccaneers, his second start of the year, and then he was just atrocious. He had like a less than a 50% completion percentage, and he was legitimately just very bad. But even when you look at that, his fantasy output was still okay. He still had 14.12 standard points, which isn't bad. All that comes down to the rushing ability, and the matchup against New Orleans is better than the one against Tampa Bay. So if I liked Kaepernick heading to that one, I have to like him here too. He is a bad quarterback right now, which is unfortunate because he's so much fun to watch, but it's just kind of the fact. But he doesn't really have to be a good quarterback to excel at home against the Saints. If you look at the Saints, they've allowed five top 10 finishes against them this year in seven games, and none of the guys that have done that can run like Cap. One of them was Cam Newton, and he did have a rushing touchdown there. But I mean, overall, we're not talking about the same rushing abilities as a guy like Colin Kaepernick. He had 17 rushing attempts in his first two starts. It's resulted in 150 rushing yards, which is insane. He has essentially been giving you the rushing production of a running back from your quarterback slot, and then you can toss in whatever he does through the air, and he should be able to do a decent amount against the Saints this week. They are 27th against the pass and 32nd against the rush based on number fires metrics. And like you said, Sal, the over-under is 52 with just a 3-point spread. So the implied team total, 24.5. That's also what we look for. It seems like Vegas is not, I guess, scared away from this team just because of what happened to Kaepernick in that game. And I think that, you know, if Carlos Hyde returns this week, that could lead to less volume for Kaepernick. But at the end of the day, Carlos Hyde has been a good running back this year. And if he can help lead them on additional touchdown drives, that's more upside for Colin Kaepernick at the end of the day. So I think that I think he's in a good spot. I am nervous about using him just because his floor isn't very good. You wonder if Christian Ponder might get a shot at that gig some point this year, which would be unfortunate. But with the pace these two teams run, they're both in the top five in situation neutral pace, according to Football Outsiders, you do have a floor there. And it's higher than you might think just based on the name Colin Kaepernick, based on the way he's played this year. So when you line up Vegas, the pace, the Saints defense, and Colin Kaepernick's rushing abilities, when you add all that up, it leads to him being a good play this week. So it hurts. I don't want to use him just because he really isn't that good of a quarterback, but you really kind of have to at this point.
I mean, you broke it down so succinctly. You know, Vegas over under 52 points. Both teams are top five in pace. Both teams have allowed five top 12 fantasy quarterback finishes. So you have a high implied team total as well, 24.5. You have a high implied team total for New Orleans, 27.5. With the amount of plays these two teams run, this is just screaming to be a very high scoring affair. And when you are in a high scoring affair, you want to start the quarterback of either team. We can't pick up Drew Brees off the waiver wire. We can't stream him. You know, that leads to us talking about Colin Kaepernick. You mentioned the rushing yards, 150 in two games. That's the seventh most by a quarterback in only two games. So basically 150 yards divided by two. He's giving you a boost to his floor of 7.5 fantasy points per game from the ground alone. Now he's ran for 66 and 84 in his two games. I mean, if you say to me, Sal, I'm going to give you Colin Kaepernick, he's going to get you 8 fantasy points rushing, no matter what in this game, and then you're just looking at maybe getting like 10 to 12 fantasy points through the air. You combine the two, and you're looking at 18 to 20 fantasy points right there from Colin Kaepernick, which I can see that happening against this New Orleans Saints defense. The only quarterbacks that haven't produced against them this year were, you know, Eli Manning, even though he threw for almost 370 yards in that game, he just didn't have any touchdowns. And the other one was Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson hasn't really been good all year. You know, Derek Carr, Matt Ryan, Philip Rivers, Cam Newton, Alex Smith threw for 20 yards and two touchdowns. If you were to say Colin Kaepernick is going to throw for, you know, 20 yards, throw a touchdown through the air, score for one on the ground, I think that turns out to be like a low-end QB1 week for him this week.
Don't get me too excited here, Sal. I don't want to get invested emotionally in this again. I don't want this to happen again, but you're getting me there, and I hate that.
I know we're talking about the running. Not too many quarterbacks have really ran on the Saints this year. Carr had 16 yards. Matt Ryan had 23. You mentioned, you know, Cam Newton had the rushing touchdown. A gimpy Russell Wilson ran for 11 yards on the Saints this year. But if you look at back last year, you know, they had five quarterbacks that ran for 20 or more yards, and that includes a high of 49 to Cam Newton again. Cam Newton actually had two of those games, 33 and 49. I really think the floor in terms of Kaepernick's rushing is at about 80 yards for this game.
Whew. That would be meaty.
I mean, I might be out of line, but Blaine Gabbert had 70 yards rushing in one game this year. if you combine Gabernick there, I just created a new
right
who might be able to stream that next week. But if you combine Blaine Gabbert and Colin Kaepernick's rushing yards this year, it's 322, which would be the most in the NFL. So, oof. You know, this team, it's either design runs by the quarterbacks, or they just can't make their first read. They'll tuck and run. Either way, we like that fantasy football.
Yeah, and there's going to be so many plays that it's just he's going to have opportunities to run. And, I mean, I like that from his passing perspective. But, yeah, you're right. It does add to his rushing floor, too. But there are going to be a lot of plays in this game. And so, yeah, it's emotionally traumatizing to use him again. But let's do it. Let's go. Colin Kaepernick, week 9.
When is fantasy football not traumatizing, though?
That's a great question. Like it's in the off season when everything looks good. It's like, wow, I love this guy's situation. His offensive line is awesome. And then you realize, oh, he's actually really bad at football. And then the tilt just begins.
Yeah, we thought we survived Nick Foles in week 3. Now he's back. But not only is he back, he's replaced one of our favorite streamers in Alex Smith. We just saw Brock Osweiler put up a dud in the prime matchup. No, every week fantasy football, there's something to complain about.
Absolutely, and it will never end either.
All right, so hopefully this next game we have absolutely nothing to complain about once the final box score comes into play, and that's the Thursday night football game. We kind of teased it earlier. It's the Atlanta Falcons at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and over under 51 points. Tampa Bay has an implied team total of 23.75. Atlanta has an implied team total of 27.25. Atlanta is currently 3.5-point favorites on the road. We have a wind projection of 7 miles per hour. We like both quarterbacks in this matchup. We don't really talk a whole lot about stream Matt Ryan because we just figured our listeners are smart enough at this point to start him pretty much in every matchup. And he even did well in matchups where you wouldn't want to start him. I think he scored almost 15 points against Denver that one week. So, you know, there's a reason why he's the number one fantasy quarterback this year.
Yeah, and I don't mind the other side of this game either. I will admit that I get very nervous about Jameis Winston in negative game flow, and Atlanta's good enough where they'll likely put him in that. So there's that reason, and also it's the second time for Winston against a divisional foe, and most quarterbacks do perform worse second time facing a divisional opponent, but if you look at the way that's broken down, there are some quarterbacks who do either the same or better the second time around, and those are guys who don't rely upon efficiency, and Jameis Winston is not an efficient quarterback, so he definitely does fit that criteria. So then you look at the rest of the process, the over under 51 with the Buccaneers implied team total at 23.75. that's good, and also this matchup is one where it shouldn't really be prohibitive of Winston and the Buccaneers posting fantasy points, even if they are trailing, because the Falcons are 24th against the pass based on number fires metrics, and they've had teams in negative game flow pretty much the entire season, yet their pass defense has still been inefficient, which kind of tells you that maybe they're actually worse than what they look like on paper, which is good for Winston. Bad for them, but very good for Winston. You look at the Atlanta defense, they've allowed 4 different top 5 passers this year, and that includes Jameis Winston back in week 1. So yes, we do need to lower expectations for him because it's his second time facing a divisional foe, and yes, it is very worrisome to put a guy like him in negative game flow, but I just think that the other things, specifically the matchup here against Atlanta's pass defense, for me, that's enough to overcome the concerns, even if I am going to feel a little bit queasy about plugging him in regardless. How are you feeling about this one, Sal?
No, I'm feeling great about this matchup. You mentioned they allowed 4 top 5 finishes. It's actually 5 if you combine Cam Newton and Derek Anderson's.
Yeah.
So performance the one week Cam went out. Both quarterbacks were, I think, top 15 that week. I know we talked about it on the podcast a little bit. But another thing, too, is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are basically taking the zero RB strategy literally. They went from Doug Martin to Jaquizz Rodgers to, it looks like it's going to be Anton. Is it Anton? Antoine? Antone?
I don't know. We were having this discussion in Slack this week, so I don't actually know. I was trying to figure out if it was Antoine, Anton. I'll go Anton. I defer to you. That sounds good to me.
I'll go with Anton, even though I think Antoine sounds cooler. But,
yeah, I agree. Totally cooler.
But
yeah,
it's going to be either him or Peyton Barber, and probably a mix of the two, rushing for these Tampa Bay Buccaneers this week. So I feel like that would just put more of an emphasis on just throwing the ball against this Atlanta defense. Now, we mentioned those top 5 finishes they've had. that's tied with, we've mentioned before, other teams in the NFL. The team with the most allowed top 12 finishes this year is Cincinnati with 6. That one surprised me when I was doing the numbers today. That's
that is weird. Yeah.
Stat nugget for next week when the Bengals are back. I know you mentioned Winston played the Falcons earlier this year. It was his best fantasy performance of the year. His QB6 scored 25.54 fantasy points. He threw 4 touchdowns against this Atlanta Falcons defense. Atlanta has allowed 3 or more passing touchdowns in 5 of 8 games. I'm not even sure that that's allowed. Like, If you look at, you know, Wentz had 4, Carr, Breeze had 3, combined Cam Newton, Derek Anderson, they had 3, Aaron Rodgers had 4. Like, this team can be passed on. And I just feel like with this high implied team, totally mentioned with New Orleans, San Francisco earlier, two teams that like to pass. We know Atlanta also likes to pass to their running backs. I just feel like this is a game that can go back and forth. When you look at the implied team total, you can kind of project something where it's, you know, back and forth, then Atlanta leads for a little bit. Tampa Bay is playing catch-up mode through the air, which just allows Winston to rack up the yards against them.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair thought process, too, when it comes to Winston in this game. And I think that, yeah, it's going to be a bit nerve-wracking if he does get a negative game flow, but that's not also not certain. I mean, Atlanta is going on the road. They are also facing an opposing divisional team for the same time, or for the second time, obviously, so that might ding Matt Ryan. So my base assumption is that Winston will be a negative game script, which is where I strongly dislike him. But that may not be the case. And I think that, like you've laid out there, his floor is good enough, even if that does happen, where the upsides of his potentially being in a script more conducive to fantasy scoring, that could be okay too. So that does kind of balance out for me pretty well.
I mean, if we just look at Winston's performances this year, his floor is 4.62 fantasy points against a pretty decent Arizona Cardinals defense. He scored 11 points against Denver, was able to put up 15 against Carolina. But no, against bad passing defenses, Atlanta, 25 points, the Rams, 25 points, San Francisco, 20 points, Oakland, 18 points. This is how bad the Brock Osweiler versus Detroit game was. Detroit had allowed the most fantasy points per game to the quarterback position heading into week 8, but because of Brock's 9 points that game, Atlanta now allows the most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks at a rate of 22.2.
All right, so fire up Jameis. Maybe I shouldn't be so nervous about this one.
I don't know. We mentioned that we like the other side, Matt Ryan. I don't think we have to spend too much time, but the 27.25 implied team total, Matt Ryan's fantasy QB1. He has 6 top 12 finishes. Atlanta's allowed 3 top 12 finishes. Ryan has scored under 15 fantasy points twice. He's scored 20 more 5 times. Tampa Bay has allowed 3 quarterbacks to score for 20 more, including Matt Ryan back in week 1, where he was the QB6 and scored 24.36 points. He actually scored less points than Winston that week.
Yeah.
So that might ease your negative game flow concerns just a tad.
Yes.
And Atlanta's go ahead.
Maybe a Matt Ryan revenge game just based on Jameis Winston outscoring him in fantasy, because I know that Matt Ryan definitely does value that. I'm sure he does. So maybe a revenge game narrative out of him too.
So I think we might be the only podcast out there talking about a Matt Ryan revenge game narrative. So let's one more thing we've coined this
right
week. And I'll just leave off this game with this stat note. Tampa Bay's allowed 2 or more passing touchdowns in 5 of their 7 games, whereas Matt Ryan has thrown for 2 more touchdowns in 6 of his 8 games. If the game goes the way Vegas projects it with its implied team total, this should be a very high-scoring game and hopefully a very high-scoring affair for both quarterbacks.
Fingers crossed. Let's go.
All right, so that does it for our top streamers of the week. That's Dak Prescott against Cleveland, Colin Kaepernick against New Orleans, and both quarterbacks in the Atlanta-Tampa Bay game. But Jameis Winston is more the quarterback we're kind of focused on because, like I said, we don't need to tell you to start Matt Ryan.
Right.
Good matchup.
Hopefully.
All right, so then this leads us on to our next segment, which is the clipboard holder of the week, quarterback we really don't like, who we recommend benching. If you have better options. And this week, it's a familiar name in Matt Stafford. He's been mentioned in this spot one before by us. I know one week it was more me than you, and it turned out that you have had the right call that week in not benching Matt Stafford. But this is the Detroit Lions on the road against the Minnesota Vikings, who are now without North Turner, where that kind of came out of nowhere.
That was weird, yeah. I don't know where that came from at all.
I don't think that will impact Matt Stafford much, but I just thought it was really interesting that happened today. And Sam Bradford had to be notified by his wife through Google Alert.
Maybe Norv Turner had a moral objection to Mike Zimmer's slaughtering of stuffed animals. I don't know if you saw that story or not, but
I did not see that story. So what happened?
There was there were apparently some stuffed cats that were in the Vikings locker room that Mike Zimmer brought in as a motivational ploy. And someone, and Zimmer says this was not him, ended up mauling the stuffed animals and, like, drawing blood on them and stuff. And I don't know, I didn't read up on it because I was so confused. But it led to a lot of really good out-of-context tweets. Like, Mike Zimmer denies mauling of stuffed animals or murder of stuffed animals and stuff like that. If you look it up, it'll probably be a solid 2 minutes of entertainment for you, because I don't know why that was a story, but maybe North Turner just has a moral objection to the mutilation of stuffed animals.
I mean, honestly, that would be probably the greatest story ever if it came out to be that is the reason,
right?
North Turner left. It wasn't because he had to coach Sam Bradford. It was because he doesn't like to see stuffed animals get hurt.
Let the conspiracy theories fly.
Back to this game we mentioned. Detroit Lions at the Minnesota Vikings. This game has a low over under 41. Detroit has an implied team total of 17.5, which when I last checked was the lowest implied team total on this slate.
Yep.
And they are currently 6-point underdogs against a Minnesota Vikings defense that has not allowed a single top 12 fantasy finish to the quarterback position this year. They are the only defense to not allow a QB1 finish. The best finish they've allowed is QB15. Then they've allowed 3 finishes of QB24 or worse. So basically unstartable in a 2-quarterback 12-team league, which is yikes.
Yeah, it's been bad for opponents against them. And the only person in Minnesota, talking specifically about games in their new stadium, the only quarterback to finish better than QB20 was Aaron Rodgers. And we know that he's one of the most efficient quarterbacks of all time. The other two quarterbacks to go to Minnesota have been QB25 and QB28. And you know, I think that Matt Stafford's been really good this year. He's having his most efficient season of all time, and that's definitely a mark in his favor. But the problem is that he's facing this Vikings defense, and it's really nerve-wracking for me to say that he'll be able to do well. I mean, Eli Manning, you know, for all his issues he's had this year, he's still a good quarterback, and he was wretched against Minnesota. And also Brock Osweiler, who we know not very good, but he was also bad there too. So I think that Stafford could potentially wind up doing okay, but I think that his floor is so low just based on that opponent, that matchup with the Vikings, that I really don't want to use him. I would use Jameis Winston, even with my reservations about him. I would happily use him over Matt Stafford in this matchup. I don't really know which quarterbacks I would use in Minnesota at this time. And Vegas backs that up too, with that implied team total of 17.5. What that tells you is you should be using the opposing defense in the Minnesota Vikings. And I can't stomach using a quarterback in that situation. So yes, Matt Stafford has been very good this year. And yes, he will probably have a positive outlook going forward. I just can't use him against the Vikings, especially on the road.
No, it's hard for me to use any quarterback against the Vikings. Right. I think Marcus Mariota had the best finish, but that's because he also ran for 19 yards. He threw the most yards, 271 yards, the most passing yards Minnesota has allowed. Marcus Mariota was the only quarterback to throw for 2 touchdowns against this defense. No, they held Cam Newton and Eli Manning to 0 passing touchdowns. Cam did score 1 on the ground. If you look at the last 4 quarterbacks, Eli Manning, Brock Osweiler, Carson Wentz, Jay Cutler, they've all scored like 15 or less fantasy points. If you take Jay Cutler out of the equation, Eli, Brock, and Carson scored under 11 fantasy points each. Like, they haven't given over 15 fantasy points to a quarterback since Cam Newton back in week 3. They are allowing the second fewest fantasy points to quarterbacks at a rate of 12.2. Denver is allowing the fewest at 12 points per game. So basically Minnesota and Denver are just right at there for defenses you don't want to stream a quarterback against. Minnesota's allowing the 4th fewest passing yards per game at 226.3, the 5th fewest touchdowns per game to the quarterback, 0.9, tied for the 2nd most interceptions in the league with 9. Everything is just telling me do not start Matthew Stafford this week.
Yeah, and you mentioned Marcus Mariota against them, and the thing that we have to remember about that, too, is that came with Xavier Rhodes out of the lineup. I think he popped his knee during warmups before that game in the opener. He missed the first two games, and that included the game against Mariota. So if we're looking at just the performances with Xavier Rhodes in there, which he should be this week, it looks even worse. So they could be even better than they look like on paper if you look just at season-long fantasy performances against them.
I know I mentioned that the last four quarterbacks to face Minnesota have scored under 15 fantasy points. That's something Matthew Stafford is accustomed to. He's scored under 15 fantasy points twice this year. And, I mean, I'm just looking at the schedule of quarterbacks upcoming against Minnesota. And there's a lot of hurt in the future of some early drafted quarterbacks. Matthew Stafford, Kirk Cousins, Carson Palmer, Stafford again, Dak Prescott, Blake Bortles, Andrew Luck, Aaron Rodgers, Jay Cutler. Oof. I mean, to be honest with you, I'm not comfortable starting any of those guys, but Rodgers and Luck would be the only guys I probably would start. And
I use Luck against Denver this year on the road, so I guess I kind of have to use him against the Vikings.
So, I mean, this Minnesota Vikings defense is for real, and it's been bringing a lot of pain to fantasy quarterback streamers.
Yeah, it's not been good.
No, not at all. But the other side of this game, we'll move on to our rapid fire section, and we'll start off with Sam Bradford, who gets to face the Detroit Lions. I mean, the over-under is still low, 41, but at least his implied team total is 20. Well, not his. The team he plays for implied team total is 23.5. They're 6-point home favorites in a dome game, which we also like. We don't have to worry about weather, and we get to see Sam Bradford play against a bad defense and should have a good game. I know Sam Bradford hasn't been getting a lot of love from the fantasy community lately, but no, this... Other than Cleveland, like, this is the prime matchup every week we like to target. Detroit is allowing a completion rate of 73.6%. I know I kind of harp on this every week, but I just find that number to be unbelievable, to be honest with you. Every time I see it, I have to, like, close my eyes, open them up again, and just make sure that I'm actually reading that. Like, how can a defense allow a quarterback basically every week to almost – complete 75% of the passes they throw against them? Like, how is that even possible?
Yeah, it shouldn't be. That's to be fully honest with you. But yeah, it's kind of like the same situation you were talking about with Brock at the beginning of the show, where the process all lines up and you kind of have to close your eyes, pretend that name isn't there. And even, you know, with Sam Bradford, I think that the sentiment against him is lower than his actual abilities. If we're looking at the matchup here, the Lions, based on number fires metrics, are the worst pass defense in the entire league. And now we could say, well, you know, Brock Osweiler didn't succeed against them. Why should we expect Sam Bradford to do so? Especially based on what Chicago did to Bradford back on Monday night. Well, that's not really an apples to apples comparison. If you look at Bradford, he is currently 18th in per dropback efficiency based on number fires metrics. Osweiler's 32nd. Like, there's a big gap between those two guys. And yes, that efficiency metric does include the expected points that teams lose on sacks. So that is factoring in that the Vikings offensive line is just a lit match short of a dumpster fire at this point. That maybe not even that far. So that is factoring that in. And Bradford is still 18th compared to Osweiler down in 32nd. And if we're looking at the Lions pass defense, they have a lot of injuries and that's hurt them in many areas, but their pass rush is one of those areas too. They are currently 19th in sack net expected points per dropback, which basically just says, you know, how effective their pass rush has been in preventing expected points for the opposing defense. They're 19th there, which means they are below average. And so even with this Vikings offensive line being potentially the worst in all of football, the Vikings still should be able to move the football and score points. So when I'm looking at Sam Bradford here, it seems as if Vegas's thought process is in line with mine with having the implied team total at 23.5. I think that's about right for Minnesota in this game, especially if he gets Jerick McKinnon back. He's got Stephon Diggs healthy. He's got Kyle Rudolph healthy. The Lions cannot stop a tight end to save their lives. I am okay with Sam Bradford, and I think that for me, he is in the discussion with those other streamers we talked about before. Not Dak, but I think that he is within striking distance of Kaepernick and Winston for me, which is surprising, I guess, just because he is Sam Bradford. But I think that's kind of where the process leads me to. How are you feeling with Bradford relative to those guys, Sal?
I still think, you know, Dak is number one, no question about it. Yep. I still like Cap more than Bradford just because of the rushing floor that he brings to his potential. I could be talked into Bradford over Winston just because of how good this matchup is. And we've seen Sam Bradford actually produce well this year compared to Brock Osweiler, you mentioned earlier. I probably like him more than our desperation quarterback who we're going to talk about later. I'm not sure if I like him more than the other rapid fire guy who we're going to get to next. Right. But I definitely see the range of outcomes for Sam Bradford being a mid to low end QB1. So basically like say QB6 to QB12, just because of how good this matchup is against the Detroit Lions. I mentioned the percentage of passes they've allowed this year. Brock completed 69% of his passes last week, which was a season high. So even though we like to dump a lot on Brock Osweiler this podcast, he still completed 20 of 29 passes against the Detroit Lions. And you mentioned just how much more efficient Sam Bradford is this year compared to Brock Osweiler. You also mentioned how bad they are at stopping the tight ends. They've allowed the most fantasy points to tight end position at 12.7 per game. They're allowing the second most fantasy points to the quarterback position at 21.9. We've seen the connection Sam Bradford has had with Kyle Rudolph this year. You throw in Stephon Diggs, who looks like he's kind of cleared his groin injury. I don't think that's really been an issue for him.
I like the phrasing on it, though.
I do have a medical background. I don't throw it out too often, though. And you also threw out Jerick McKinnon's name. If he can get back into this game, I think that would also help him. Detroit's allowed 5 top 12 finishes. They also had a 6 QB13 finish before Brock Osweiler's QB25 finish last week. The worst finish they allowed was Marcus Mariota back in week 2, but he had still scored 16.62 fantasy points. Brock was the first quarterback to face Detroit this year. That sentence did not sound well at all. Brock was the first quarterback to face Detroit this year that didn't score multiple touchdowns or throw for 200 yards in a game. If you take out Brock's game from last week, which I wish we could, honestly, it'd be nice to just forget about it.
Scrub it from the earth.
Detroit would be allowing 23.7 fantasy points per game to the quarterback position, which would put him back in first over Atlanta. Bradford has scored 15 or more points in 3 of his 6 games and has a QB11 and QB13 finish on his resume. And if you look at what Detroit has allowed this year, Andrew Luck, Brian Hoyer, Case Keenum, Kirk Cousins, they all threw for over 300 yards. Luck and Rodgers had 4 touchdowns. Case Keenum had 3 touchdowns. I might be going out on a limb. I know I like to do this every once in a while on the podcast, but I feel Sam Bradford might be better than Case Keenum. And we remember that game. Keenum scored almost 30 fantasy points against these Detroit Lions.
And that was in Detroit, mind you.
Yeah, it was... it was a game to remember that everybody is kind of forgotten about, I think.
Yes, absolutely. Kenny Britt, just the savior of all things beautiful.
So basically, we saw what the floor is. It's 10 points from Brock Osweiler. We've seen what the ceiling is, 35 from Andrew Luck, but basically 30 points from Case Keenum. I feel like Sam Bradford could match that total. And if Jerick McKinnon is out and it's just Matt Asiata at running back, I think that even plays more into a boost to Sam Bradford, because then they can just focus on throwing the ball more rather than giving him Matt Asiata carries.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting to see what the offense does under Pat Shurmur, but the good thing here is that he's always run a more fast-paced offense, and I think that based on Football Outsiders' situation-neutral pace, the Vikings have actually been very fast this year, but I could see them being faster under Pat Shurmur, so that would be another boost for Bradford's floor. So I think that this is a good spot. I think that change at coordinator could be good for Bradford, too, some quicker passes for him, which can kind of get rid a bit of that detriment that is the offensive line. So I think that the changeover from Norv to Shurmur could be good for Bradford. We may not see it this week, but overall, I do think that could wind up serving solid gains for him as a fantasy asset.
I mean, like, we'll find out this week exactly how it's going to play out. But right. If he does have the type of game that we're projecting him to have, he gets this team again in week 12.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, that's playoffs.
All right, so that's enough Sam Bradford talk for this podcast. Move on to our last rapid fire recommendation for the week. This is Ryan Tannehill going up against the New York Jets. This game has a 44 over under. The Jets have an implied team total of 20.25, but the Dolphins have an implied team total of 23.75, making them a 3.5 home favorite. One thing I definitely did not like when I was looking at this number fire daily help for lineup page was the 19 mile per hour wind projection that is going on for this game. And if anybody who listens to our podcast regularly knows, Jim is not a fan of wind when it's at around 10 miles per hour. So I can't imagine you're liking 19 miles per hour.
No, I think that's kind of scary. So if it stays at 19, then I would be very nervous about using Tannehill, even in a very good matchup. And I had gotten this foolish notion in my head that the Jets' defense is getting better because they had done well against Carson Palmer and Joe Flacco. But then Cody Kessler kind of ripped them – or sorry, Josh McCown last week kind of ripped them apart. So the Jets, 29th against the pass. I thought Darrell Revis was over his injuries, but he – did not look good at all last week. So that's kind of nullified that thought. The Dolphins, they're at home, the 3.5-point favorites with an implied team total of 23.75. And if you look at what the Jets have done this year, they've been able to stop the run effectively. They're fifth against the rush, and that could force the Dolphins to kind of abandon that rush-heavy approach they've had with Jay Ajayi recently, where they just give him the rock and let him do what he wants. I don't think they'll be able to do that against the Jets defense. They still got Mo Wilkerson. They've got Sheldon Richardson. He was not dealt. Leo Williams. They're all up there. They're really good up front, and that could force the Dolphins to pass. And given the Jets pass defense, that's a positive. I don't want to have my quarterback in a spot where he has to throw. I prefer a spot where he can throw and throw efficiently. But I think for Tannehill against this Jets defense, that would wind up being a positive from a volume perspective. So as long as the wind goes down and there is some drizzle in the forecast too, I'd prefer that to go away. But if the weather forecast is looking okay, then Tannehill is in at least a decent spot.
Yeah, I mean, why would you want to run against this Jets defense?
No, absolutely.
When you can throw against a defense allowing 302.1 passing yards per game, they have allowed the most passing yards in the league, 2,417. They've allowed four top 12 fantasy quarterback finishes. They've allowed five of the eight quarterbacks they faced to score 18 or more fantasy points. That's Andy Dalton, Tyrod Taylor, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, and Josh McCown, who you mentioned last week. Tannehill does have two top 10 finishes and has scored 15 or more points in four of his seven games. So I feel if this game does go according to game script, Tannehill should be able to reach that 15 fantasy point marker pretty easily. If you just look at some of the game logs, you know, Andy Dalton, Russell Wilson, Ben Roethlisberger, Josh McCown have all thrown for 300 yards. Tyrod Taylor, who's not really a guy you kind of envision throwing for 300 yards in a game, threw for 297 against them. They've allowed three quarterbacks to throw three or more touchdowns in a game. Add Josh McCown's two touchdowns last week. So that's, you know, four of the eight quarterbacks they faced to, you know, throw for two or more touchdowns. It's still kind of hard to wrap my head around just how bad the Jets defense has been in terms of, you know, stopping the quarterback, because we've just gotten so used to them being a dominating defense over the years. But this year has not been the case. Like, this is a defense you want to attack at your quarterback position streaming-wise, unless you start into Joe Flacco and Carson Palmer those 2 weeks. But other than that, it's just been basically fantasy gold. No, four quarterbacks have scored 22 or more fantasy points against them this year. Like, that's kind of insane to think about.
Yeah, and a big thing for the Dolphins, too, while we're still discussing Tannehill here, is I've kind of focused this when discussing Jay Ajayi and why his start is kind of relevant, but it works for Ryan Tannehill, too. But you think back to that first Ajayi freakout game where he had 200 yards. I think it was week 6. That was the first game the entire year where the Dolphins had Brandon Albert, Laremy Tunsil, and then I think it's Marquise Pouncey. It might be Mike, one of the two. Their center, Pouncey. That's the first time the entire year they had all three of those guys healthy in a game. And it was basically the first time that the Dolphins offense looked competent, and they blew up. They did it again in week 7. They had a bye week now, and they'll have, you know, Tunsil, Albert, and Pouncey out there again for week number 9 against the Jets defense. And I think that'll definitely help them against that Jets, you know, that Jets stout front, because their offensive line, for the first time potentially in Ryan Tannehill's time with the Dolphins, they're playing really good football. And I think that we need to adjust to that. It gives me more hope for Tanny going forward than I had in the past, because I was always worried about his offensive line. But now those concerns are definitely less than they were. So give me Ryan Tannehill week 9 over Ryan Tannehill week 5 any day. My confidence in him is much higher now than it was at that point. Again, as long as the weather isn't too bad.
Yeah, and you mentioned just how well this defense has been against the run. I know funnel defense has been kind of a trendy word in fantasy football circles this year. You know, the Jets are allowing the 9th most fantasy points per game to quarterbacks at 18.5. But they're allowing just the 17th most to running backs at a clip of 17.1. So it definitely makes sense to have a more pass-heavy than run-heavy game plan when you're going up against the New York Jets defense this year.
And yeah, for sure.
They did not trade Sheldon Richardson or Muhammad Wilkerson, even though there was some rumor about that happening.
Yeah. I saw that they were asking for a second round pick for Sheldon Richardson, which is like egregiously low. And like, if they had done that, I probably would have just like tilted into oblivion and just failed to exist at that point. Like, he's very good at football. Please do not do that.
All right, well, luckily you did not.
Right. Still here.
You're still here. And that leads us into our very last recommendation of the week. This is a desperation play of the week. We kind of highlight a quarterback who might be available on the waiver wires in 2 quarterback leagues based on a no injury to a starter or ineffective play from a starter. This week we got another name. Luckily, you know, in the past few weeks we've been able to highlight a guy in this spot. Kind of shows you kind of how deep quarterback position is. Mm-hmm. You know, 44 different quarterbacks have started at least one game this year. That number will be at least 45 after Nick Foles makes his first start of the year for the Kansas City Chiefs against the Jacksonville Jaguars in replacement of a concussed, not concussed, Alex Smith. maybe we'll get some clarity on that at some point. When I was doing my research for the podcast in general, the news hadn't hit yet of the Alex Smith is out for week 9. So at the time, the over-under was 46. It's gone down by 2 points now to 44. Kansas City had a 27.5 implied team total, which is something they've been hovering around the past few weeks. It's now gone down to 25.75, and they've gone from 9-point home favorites to 7.5 home favorites. But that's still all, you know, good check marks when you look at it in terms of, you know, wanting to start Nick Foles this week, especially because, you know, here's a guy you had no idea was even going to be playing this week or last week. The Jags defense has allowed 17.4 fantasy points per game. That's the 13th most in the league. They've allowed two top 12 finishes, but it's 2 top 7 finishes plus 2 more top 13 finishes. So basically 4 quarterbacks have finished top 13 or better against this defense. 4 of the QBs face the Jaguars this year have scored 18 or more fantasy points. Foles scored almost 17 points in relief of Alex Smith last week against Indy. He scored 18 or more fantasy points in a game twice last year. So for teams that are on a bye or need to fill in a quarterback because their quarterback is in a bye, that's, you know, Jay Cutler, Andy Dalton, Tom Brady, Carson Palmer, Kirk Cousins, Houston Texans, you're going to find a difficult time finding anybody better than Nick Foles on your waiver wire in 2 quarterback leagues.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there could be some reservations about Nick Foles based on what happened last year where he got benched for Case Keenum. Obviously, that's not good. But if you look at the weapons around him in Kansas City, they're a lot better than what he had in, at that time, St. Louis. I mean, you know, I know that Brian Quick is a a deity in dynasty circles, you know, for his the myth that is Brian Quick. And Kenny Britt is better than what he's given credit for. But you look at Jeremy Maclin, Travis Kelce, they excelled with Nick Foles at quarterback last week against Indianapolis. So he does have better weapons than he has had in the past. And you were talking about the spread tightening, Sal. That's not a bad thing for Kansas City, because as we talk about all the time with Alex Smith, is he performs better when, you know, Andy Reid can't just grind out clock with their running backs. And I think that backfield situation is another aspect that does benefit Nick Foles from a volume perspective this week. Not only will they not likely have Spencer Ware, it seems like he probably won't play. That means they have Charcandrick West, who is not as efficient of a runner as Spencer Ware is, but also they lost their left guard, Parker, I think it's Ehinger, E-H-I-N-G-E-R. I don't know how to say his last name. But when you look at their splits with him and without him this year, he has played four games and he's missed three. Their per carry efficiency is night and day difference when he has been able to play. So that's going to have an effect. Not having Spencer Ware will have an effect. I think they're going to have to throw a decent amount in this game. So if you're in a spot where you have to use Nick Foles, Jacksonville's defense is a lot better than they were last year. But like you said, Sal, you could do a lot worse than this.
I mean, I know a lot of people are trying to figure out who's going to benefit in terms of pass catchers in this offense with Nick Foles at quarterback. Luckily, we don't have to worry about that. What we do get to talk about, though, is the weapons he does have at his disposal. You know, if Spencer Ware plays, no, that's great. It's another option in the passing game. Charcandrick West plays, it's another option in the passing game. You know, we got Jeremy Maclin, Tyreek Hill, Albert Wilson, Chris Conley, Travis Kelce. Like you mentioned earlier, how much better the situation is for him than it was in St. Louis last year, and that is abundantly clear with the options he has. So we get to enjoy Nick Foles just throwing to all these options rather than having to figure out who exactly is going to be catching those passes. And I'm looking at the number fire DFS lineup helper page right now, which conveniently has projections listed under each game. And they have Nick Foles projected to score more points than Blake Bortles in this game.
who does that say more about? Nick Foles or Blake Bortles?
Exactly. I know Blake Bortles was a top 12 drafted quarterback in two quarterbacks this year. And now we're in week 9 of the fantasy football season. And Nick Foles is projected to score more points than him.
Just free Chad Henne, man. Free so Chad Henne. Free the Henne.
Not only are you going to find it hard to find a quarterback better to stream than Nick Foles from the waiver wire, Nick Foles is going to outscore guys that were drafted in like third, right, fourth, fifth round of fantasy football leagues this year.
This is Nick Foles still.
Yeah, it is Nick Foles. Hopefully it's not that Nick Foles in week 3.
Right.
That's
absolutely
what we don't want to happen.
9 is a multiple of 3. It is the square of 3.
So I know it's getting late there in the East Coast. We're past 10 o'clock, probably too late to be talking about Nick Foles. We didn't expect that to be happening this week. So we'll put a wrap on this podcast. Quickly recap the quarterbacks we like this week. Dak Prescott, Colin Kaepernick, Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan. We like Ryan Tannehill and the other quarterback, Sam Bradford. We just mentioned Nick Foles, as you heard. Quarterback we don't like this week is Matthew Stafford. So that should put a bow on it for this week's podcast. As always, thank you for listening. My name is Salvatore Stefanelli. You can find me on Twitter at 2QBFFB. You can find my work on 2QBs.com, the website that sponsors this podcast, and my co-host, Jim Sonis. Jim, as usual, why don't you let the listeners know where they can find you and your work?
You can find me on Twitter at Jim Sonnes, JIMSANNES. Feel free to, if you have any questions, feel free to shoot them over that way. And then also, all my work is up on numberfire.com.
Perfect. So everybody out there, thanks for listening, and happy Week 9 quarterback streaming. We gotta stay positive.